Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi there, Wendy's Coffee House. Thanks for joining me. If you miss any of the shows, you know you can always get them in the archives. Just download it. Go to wendyscoffeehouse.com. Artie Six Killer Clark has done some phenomenal research to bring these books to us, and really extraordinary stories. Let me go back and backtrack a little bit. She's the professor emeritus at Montana State University. Got a background in English, history. She's covered ufology from U.S. and then South America. The books, the one I started with, was the Encounters with Star People, Untold Stories of American Indians. And then the next one kicked into Sky People, Untold Stories of Alien Encounters in Mesoamerica. That was really cool because she had to go into places that there were drug runners and that kind of stuff. The current work is right here in the U.S. Artie, you're brave because you go out in some of these places alone and you contact people that may or may not want to tell their story, and you come back with some incredible tales. So thank you. Just thank you. And I appreciate you taking time to talk.
Well, I'm happy to be here. You know, I always enjoy talking to you, Wendy.
Well, you've got great stories. I wanted to get into this one because you open the book, and really the encounter you have when you're alone in your RV with this guy named Tom, it sets the stage. The very last thing you expect when he goes into the portals.
Oh, I know. Tom was a... I hadn't expected to encounter him. I was on my way to Canada to the Writing on the Stone Provincial Park, which is across the border from Montana. And I stopped to take some photographs, and Tom was camping at this isolated spot. It wasn't a regular campground or anything. He was just pulled off the road there and was camping in this spot. When I started to leave, I had told him where I was headed, and I said, you know, I'm just traveling the back roads of Montana following up on some stories I've heard. And he said, well, are you checking into UFO stories? And, you know, I just stopped dead in my tracks, and then he began to tell me about that the UFOs often come to this area, and then began to tell me about the Universal Highway, and he says there was a portal there. And that UFOs would travel back and forth on this Universal Highway. And if you were there, you could step into that portal. And you could, in your mind, you could say where you wanted to go, and it would take you there, whether it was to another planet or to another place on Earth or whatever. And then he told me about his experience that he had had when he was in the military in Iraq, where he had gone into this vacant building to seek shelter from a sniper that was overhead. And suddenly this whirlwind came up, and he found himself in a tunnel and met with a man who offered to battle zone and return him home. And when he told them that, you know, that was desertion, he couldn't leave his comrades, they were quite confused by that, by his loyalty, and told him they would return the next day, and if he wanted to leave, they would take him then. But obviously, he never returned. He did his tour of duty there, and had himself traveled the Universal Highway and told me of various sites around the country where and in the world where they existed. So it was an interesting visit with him.
See, I think that would be fascinating. That's like the $64,000 question, or the how many ever portals there are questions.
I know. It was just amazing encounter. And it's interesting because he told me of this one entity that came through the portal, and he took him on a tour of North and South Dakota and Wyoming and Montana and various, Idaho, I believe he included. And he said, you know, that they visited reservations and participated in ceremonies and that everyone knew he was a star man, but nobody revealed who he was. But they just accepted him as a brother.
Well, and part of that, you ask him, you know, I think I remember you saying, you know, how do you know if somebody is? Because he's not the only one.
Right. And he said because of the way they react to adversity, how they treat others, and, you know, the kindness. And after I met him and I was leaving there and I was thinking, you know, well, he's probably one of the kindest people I've ever met and so unassuming and gentle. I'm thinking, well, is he a star person? Because it's really strange sometimes when I think of him. He'll show up at my doorstep and say, what's for dinner, you know? And so sometimes I think he himself may be a star traveler.
It's certainly, yeah, that one is a mystery, and I am super curious about him. There's so many stories in here. I like the one, I met my wife on a UFO.
Oh, yes. You know, that's another interesting story. I met this young man that was looking at enrolling in the doctoral program at MSU, and he was sent to me because he had studied it. He'd done his undergraduate and master's program in Montana and had gone back east to do his doctoral work, and then suddenly decided it was just absolutely too far from home and came back and looked at our program, and I met with him, and then over the next few years, he happened to be in a position where I worked with him, and he told me one day that he met his wife on a UFO, and then he said about describing being abducted as a child, and going on to this UFO, and there were many other children there, but that his wife had as a girl, I had no recollection of seeing him there. And when he saw her again in high school, he was a senior in high school, and he'd gone down to the Denver powwow, and he saw her there, and he knew immediately who she was. And so he asked her to dance, and they became a couple over the years. And when they graduated from college, they married, and he told her, you know, I saw you on a UFO. I met you on a UFO. And he began to describe the dress she was wearing.
Wow.
And she went into, he said, the hallway, and there was a cedar chest in the hallway, and she pulled out this dress that he had described. And she said, I only wore this two times. She said, my father bought it for me for my birthday, and I wore it for my birthday party. And then suddenly my dad died, and I wore it to his funeral, and I never wore it again. So she was quite shaken by the story and believed that there was no other way that he would have known this had he not seen her on a UFO.
See, that's fantastic. And amazing that she would have kept that.
But, you know, there's some interesting, I think, some other interesting stories. I learned a lot of information. For example, you don't hear a lot of stories about elderly being abducted.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Emery down in Wyoming, who told me the story about being abducted by a UFO while he was night fishing, and then is taken on board this craft, and is examined, and they ask him how old he was. And when he told them he was 69, they told him he was too old and released him.
That's not fair.
You know, and I've heard that from several people I've interviewed, that when they've been taken and they're suddenly, you know, discover how old they were, they just let them go. So obviously they are interested in, you know, abducting younger people who can perhaps supply them with the kinds of things they're looking for.
Better DNA.
Whatever they're looking for.
I'll tell you what, that's where this gets fascinating, because I want to go into, I don't want you to tell the whole thing now, but I want to go into in the next break the story about the woman whose daughter is being abducted, and then, you know, how that works out, because you kept tabs on these folks, and that's the follow-up that's so surprising, is that when you're keeping tabs and they don't reappear. Okay, we're going to do that the next break, but I also want to ask, I saw that you had a children's series, and that's on your website. You said it's no longer in print, but you're working
right
on a new one?
I am working on a new one. It's about a little rabbit named Nokisi from the planet Elisi. And Nokisi gets stranded on Earth. And Earth is very different from his planet. And he gets adopted by an Earth family, a rabbit family, mm-hmm. and goes about exploring and making Earth his home.
Okay, and I think, given all the stories you've had, like some of the ones from South America about the guy who goes on regular visits on the UFOs, I remember that's the one that stood out for me, was the frequent flyer from South America, and I can't remember his name. But these stories that you have collected, I think, should give you plenty of fodder for your children's series.
Well, it does, and I would, you know, this is just in the, you know, I mean, I've written a couple of the stories, but I need to find a publisher, and I'm exploring also the option of self-publishing. You know, I'd have to find an artist that could do, because obviously a rabbit from Elisi doesn't exactly look like an Earth rabbit, so I have to find an artist who can
like Bugs Bunny's alter ego.
Right.
Okay. And then the book that got my attention, The Day the World Will End, that's one of your children's stories. Okay, that's kind of ominous.
Yeah, that's an ancient legend that comes from the Lakota Sioux. And it's a story of an elderly woman. It's an old legend. A story of an elderly woman who lives in a cave. And her only companion is this little dog, and she spends her days. The little dog goes out and feeds her. I mean, he hunts and he brings back rabbits and he brings back squirrels and things for her to eat, and takes care of her. And she spends her day quilting, and she's making this huge quilt. And when she goes inside for a nap, the little dog, he takes out all the stitches that she's made. Because if she finishes the quilt, that's the day the world will end.
Oh, man. Oh, that's a great...
It's a wonderful story.
Yes.
And it actually comes from the Lakota in South Dakota. It's a story I heard in South Dakota.
I love it. Okay, now, we've got to put you on hold, because we're going to take a quick break here and do some news and commercials, but we're going to come back. I want you to tell that story about the young woman, her mom, and her grandmother, because this is a fascinating story, and there's more to it, of course. Artie Six Killer Clark will keep you on the edge of your seat. All right? Wendy's Coffee House. Don't go away. Talk Radio KCMO. Okay. Kicking it into gear. Artie Six Killer Clark is my guest, and she's got some dynamite books. If you are curious about alien contact, all sorts of stuff, you heard with Tom at the beginning of the show, that portal, that to me was fascinating, and the possibility that there are some out there, and we all want to know where they are, okay? We all want to know. My thing is, though, if I go into it, can I get back? Tom can, but I'm not sure if I was on my own, I could find my way. This is a story about a young lady who has contact, and her mom and her grandmother. And Artie, I found this one fascinating.
Well, it's fascinating to me because I've never been able to find Mary since she told me she was leaving. Mary, when I first met Mary, she told me that she had encountered a UFO 12 years earlier, and she began to describing an event that she was going home from work. She had picked up her little girl from Montessori school, and was headed home. She lived with her mother in a house that her husband, her deceased husband, had built for them. And she said that as she's going down the highway, all of a sudden the dashboard lights faded on her car and the car stopped, and there was a blinding light that appeared up ahead on the road. And she said she got out of the car and she unstrapped Sherry from her car seat and decided to walk home. She said she was no more than a mile from the house. And she said the night was clear and the moon was bright, so she told herself she could make it. And she decided to go through this field, which would be a cutoff that would get her, take about a quarter of a mile off the walk. And she said she was about halfway across the field when the light returned, but she said this time she realized it wasn't a helicopter or a plane, which she's originally thought, but this light fell upon them. And she said the next thing she knew, she was on board a spacecraft, and these beings were examining Sherry, and that she said she kept hearing in her head that Sherry didn't belong to her. And I said, well, who was telling you this? She says, I don't know. They just kept saying that Sherry belongs to them. And I remember, she said, I screamed at the top of my lungs at the voices in my head. And I said, well, what happened next? And she said, well, the next thing I know, I'm in front of my door with Sherry in my arms. And she says, you're not going to believe this. My car was parked in the driveway. And she says, I know this sounds crazy and impossible, but it's true. And she said, I sat on the doorstep and I just cried and cried. And here's my little girl trying to comfort me. And when I saw that car in the driveway, she said, I knew how powerful they were. And she said, I said, well, have you seen them since? And she said, oh, yes, many times. She said, the next time I saw them, Sherry was 4, and it was the same thing. She said, they kept saying that she wasn't my own. And when Sherry was 6, they came back for her. Every 2 years at the beginning, they came, she said. And I said, well, was their communication any different? And she said, when they were 6, when she was 6, they took us into this room, and there they repeated again that Sherry was not my daughter. They explained that I only provided the means for her birth on Earth. And they reminded me how I had been told by doctors that I could not have children. And I said, well, was that true? And she said, yes. She said, my husband Dean and I have been trying to have a child for 7 years and nothing happened. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm pregnant. And she said, they told me that they had allowed me to keep her, but that when she was a woman, they would come for her. And I said, well, did they tell you when this was going to happen? They said, yes, when she was 17. And she said, she's 14 now. So I only have 3 more years, and then she's going to be gone. And she's trying to think when she was telling me this story, you know, where she could disappear to, that they wouldn't know where she was. And she thought about where could she find a place, like maybe go to New Mexico or Oklahoma, where there are a lot of Native people. And she says, I just don't know what I'm going to do without my baby. And I didn't talk to her except on the phone for the next 4 months. We visited on the phone. And she told me that they told her they were collecting young women from all over the world. And they were all the same age as Sherry. And I said, well, there must be a reason why they're doing it. And she says, well, I don't know. They haven't told me. I said, well, you seem to be calmer. Are you accepting this situation? And she said, well, Sherry tells me I have nothing to worry about, that I would always be with her. And Sherry believes them, and she thinks she's going on an adventure. And I said, well, do you believe them? And she says, well, I just don't know. And she says, I have something else to tell you. My mother says she has met them. And I said, are you telling me your mother, Pearl, has been abducted? She said, yes. And I said, why? She says, well, I'm not sure. They haven't told me, and if my mother knows, she hasn't told me either. And so this goes on for several months. And after I left her that day, I didn't see Mary again for about 8 months. And Sherry was 16 by now. And when I told her I was coming to Phoenix the following week, I could have sworn she thought my visit was an inconvenience. But I said nothing. I showed up at her doorstep, and she welcomed me with a smile. But in that time, she had lost about 50 pounds. And while I marveled at her transformation as she bounced around the kitchen like a teenager, I said, she looked at me, and she poured a glass of white wine and offered me one. And then she said, "I'm going to miss wine." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she said, "Well, they said I can go, but I don't think they have wine there," she said. And I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" And she said, "4 months ago, they told me I had to prepare myself. And so that's why I've lost weight." And she says, "I gave up meat. I only eat vegetables and fruit." And she said, and I said, "Well, why are you going?" She says, "Where I'm going, there's no meat. We have to live off of fruits and vegetables." And I said, "Could you tell me exactly what they told you?" She says, "Well, they told me to get my things in order because if I wanted to go with Sherry, I was welcome to go. Even my mother is being invited." And I said, "Mary, do you know what you're doing?" And she says, "Not much, but I'll find out." And she just keeps, she's extremely excited that she's going on this journey. And I said, "Well, is Sherry a hybrid baby?" She says, "They're going to take us to another planet." That's what she told me. They call themselves Cedars, she said. They travel the universe looking for livable planets. And when they find one that's devoid of life, they populate it. And she says they have created all these young women around the world that are going to be taken with their mothers and their grandmothers if they're alive and there are no other relatives, and we're all going to populate this planet. And I said, "Only women?" And she said, "Yes, only women. This is an experiment." And I said, "Well, is Sherry a hybrid baby?" And she says, "What they do is they select women with no relatives, and they help them become pregnant with a hybrid baby." And she says, "But Sherry is 100% human. She's Dean's daughter and my daughter, but she's also been implanted with some of their DNA. So she has all these special abilities and qualities."
We're going to have to take a break. That's an amazing story. And when we come back, Artie, hang on a minute, okay? When we come back, there's a guy you talked with who was a Native American, Jimmy. He was a healer, and he has more stories that have to do with the alien species that are on the planet. Okay, we got to take a break. But Artie Sixkiller-Clark, the book we're talking about right now, is More Encounters with Star People. We'll be back with more incredible information from Artie on Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House on Talk Radio KCMO. Glad to have you along. My guest today, Artie Sixkiller-Clark, incredible stories. And this is just, these are just the tip of the iceberg. More Encounters with Star People, the current book, Urban American Indians Tell Their Stories. Now, I wanted to wrap up that other story with, they're going to another planet. They have no clue. They're just on the leap of faith. Mom, daughter, and grandma are all going with the UFO folks to some unknown planet somewhere in this dimension galaxy. What was the upshot? It's only women?
Only women. And she said that she would be leaving. She expected to be gone in a couple of months. And so the next time I was in the area, I went to the place of her employment, and she was gone. Her house had been donated. She had given her everything away. I went to her mother's home village to see if they knew anything, and they didn't know anything. I've asked everybody who knows her, and nobody knows where she went. And I'm always on the lookout for Mary, but to this day, I have not been able to find her. And I often think about that. Would I want to live on a planet inhabited by women?
Yeah.
Only by women. I think, I try to imagine a world without men, and then I think,
wow.
The truth is, I like and respect the men in my world, and I can't imagine being happy with
Oh, I know.
Only women.
It's mind-boggling.
In that world. Huh?
It's mind-boggling. I can't imagine it either. You know, I have my little fights every now and then with a few guys in my life.
Yeah,
but that makes it interesting.
But, you know, And you wanted me to talk about Jimmy Grey Dog.
Yeah.
Jimmy was an interesting man. I met him in Death Valley. I was on my way down to the Star Trek convention of all things in Las Vegas. I have a lot of requests by people who write to me and they want to meet me, and so I think a lot of people who are UFO investigators or who have had experiences with UFOs like science fiction, and a lot of them seem to be Star Trek fans, and there's an annual Las Vegas meeting with Star Trek fans down in Las Vegas, and so a group of them were going and asked me if I would be willing to meet with them there. And so I thought, well, I've never been to a Star Trek convention. Sure, I'll go. And so I stopped off in the Death Valley National Park and was camping out there. And in the evening, I walked out away from the campground because I wanted to get out and just look at the night sky where it was not hindered by lights. And as I walked out toward the desert area there, a voice called to me, and it was Jimmy Grey Dog, and he was very concerned that I might be abducted. And he proceeds to tell me the stories of people who have been abducted from the very spot where I was standing, and that he has kept a record of all the abductions. He himself, had, along with a group of high school friends, had been abducted years before. And he had taken it upon himself, because this was the area, in the area where they had been abducted, and he had taken it upon himself to watch for this kind of activity in the area.
Why there?
He said he wasn't very popular with the national park people, and they have been threatening him many times to throw him out. So he doesn't tell very many people about what he does, but he kept a meticulous record with a complete description, approximate age, the date and time of their abduction, the date and time of their return, and if they didn't return, he noted that as well. And so he was just an amazing man who had taken it upon himself and thought someday maybe all of these records he was keeping. And there was another a friend of his that was abducted at the same time he was when they were back in high school, who also kept a record. And so there were two of them. And I haven't met the other one, but I'm going to the Southwest in December. I'm speaking at the Phoenix and the Tucson MUFON meetings in December. And I hope to connect up with the two of them while I'm there.
Okay, the ones that didn't return, was there a common theme?
Not that I know of. He talked of one young woman that went out. He said she was dressed in a long, flowing red dress, and she went out, he said, right beyond the boulder where you sat down. He said she went out there, and she held her arms into the air, and suddenly this beam of light came down and she was taken away, and he said she was never returned.
Okay, see, I wonder if some of these are like the portal guy, that they are travelers. They know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, because that sounds like she knew it. She was expecting something and had called there.
Oh, yeah, it seems as though. And it certainly is an area where people are abducted.
Wow. Okay, well, X marks the spot.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're not going to go stand there again, right?
Well, you know, I'm not, unless I'm with Jimmy, who watches for aliens all the time, and
he's probably not the right age anymore, too.
At least I'm probably not the right age. That's for sure.
Me neither. I'm like, okay, fine, we're safe. Oh, man, this has gone by so fast. Artie, I love your stories. I think you've done so many great favors by getting these stories out to people. And I remember we talked before, and you said when you floated the idea of just, you know, regular people telling stories, the publisher said, no, they're not interested. Well, You know, I think we're all interested. So you keep keeping those stories, okay? Don't stop collecting them.
Well, you know, and I am, and you know, maybe one of these days what I'll do is just self-publish a book, because I have probably 200 or 300 stories from non-Native people who I'll be someplace, and like on the reservation, there are a lot of non-Natives who live on reservations, and they'll come up to me and they'll say, well, I'm not an Indian, but I have a story to tell, and I want to tell you. And so I've collected so many stories from people who may have a connection with the reservation, or just maybe someone who has read my book. I get emails all the time from people say, well, I'm not an Indian, but I sure have a story to tell you. So I would like to, you know, eventually write a book about those stories, but like my publishers say, the people are more interested in what Native people think because of that connection historically of Native people with the Star people.
I think they're more trustworthy. Okay, I think that's the issue. There's a level of trust. We're going to have to get out of here. If you're listening and you want to contact Artie, you can contact her at her website, sixkiller.com. And Artie,
or write me at Artie@sixkiller.com.
Excellent. Okay, well, keep writing. And man, I wish we had more time, but we don't. So
I do too.
So, all right, you've got your mission. You've got your
next
session, next story, the children's series, that's in the works. So we're going to try and push that to see if anybody will pick it up for you, because I know there'll be some dynamite stuff with the rabbit.
Right. No, Casey. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.